another week, another episode of Ingrowth Retrust.
That's nice. I experimented at first, you remember, with the digitized voices, the intro. Do you remember that? Ingrowth Retrust. But the computer generated voice, and you didn't like it. I thought it was quite cool. That was awesome, man. That was wicked.
Yeah, we spoke to Priyana and Shannon, co-founders of Volve, a media company, an app that is like an AI news app that curates and gives you the news in 9 seconds.
Not just news on AI.
Any news. AI powered or whatever the curated term is. AI curated and summarized for you. That was great. They have a very interesting story on how they came up with the app, but also how they grew it, how they got their first few hundred users, talking about interesting partnerships with newsletters and YouTubers.
Importance of speaking to your users again is a common subject that keeps coming up. But I think the story they had about the effective pivot of the branding, everything based on the back of that, is really interesting case study.
Really informed their positioning, which is different than they thought it was going to be. We talk about reaching out to celebrities prior to Volve as well. Like there's a common recurring topic that comes again about not being afraid to cold approach people that could be interesting to your company. So there's a few big name dropped in there. We talk about being a Snapchat part of the Snapchat incubator group and meeting with Evan Spiegel every now and then when you're part of it, which must be quite cool. Great episode, loved it. And if you listen carefully as well, we mention that we finally done a few merch as well. So that is coming. I have no idea how we're going to distribute those. There was it's a bit of off the cuff impromptu decision we took in last week. In our business WhatsApp meeting. That's cool. That's cool too.
Here's a challenge. We'll give away one piece of merch, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
To whoever, if you're listening, unfortunately, it's going to be Spotify only. But you can communicate with us through Spotify. If you communicate with us through Spotify and tell us what is the merch that we mentioned that we've just had created, so you have to listen carefully, then the first person or a random person that does that will win a piece.
You know, like on every, I agree with that. That's a great giveaway, a great little test. Let's see if at least one person does it, so we can give away that one thing. In our show notes for this episode, there is a leave a voice message link that is added by Spotify, but anyone can do it. You can use that. Click the voice message thing, send us a voice message, and we'll get it. And we'll pick the winner from that. So yeah, what merch did we make?
Don't be shy. We're not shy. We talk all the time to you guys, so now you need to return the favor.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy the episode.
Bye. This is our first podcast with two guests, so four people together. So we're feeling the heat. And Yo's just told me that he might have to... He's getting his broadband upgraded today, so if it gets cut off, then it's literally going to be just me and you guys. So
you know, they give you like a window of 5 hours, and like if the guy turns up in this hour, I'm doomed. But if it's any time after that, it's good. So we'll see. Hopefully, it will be late. Nice to meet you both.
Fine. Nice you to meet too. You.
Welcome to the podcast. In Growth We Trust. We were talking a little bit about you and what you do before you joined, but it would be great, because the first time we meeting the two of you, to get like just like a very little intro about who you are and what you do and what Volve is about, and we'll start digging in.
So I'm Priyanka, the co-founder of Volve. before Evolve, both of us were doing different things. I was in finance, she was in consulting and law. And we actually worked on a different startup before Evolve. It was a social startup, which, you know, the main point of that was to collaborate with any kind of online companies and raise funds for any urgent crises. So earthquake, COVID, whatever, we tried for everything. And it went well, except for the one campaign which kind of led to Evolve. It basically made us realize that, first of all, the young generation does not read long form content or just go on any website, you know, like for news. And secondly, we literally had to cold email a bunch of celebrities to be like, hey, can you help us spread the word? Because, you know, we need to reach our audience. And at the same time, like, there was just so much going on, like so much misinformation, so much bias in the news that it just did not seem correct. And so obviously it went well, like Kerry Washington and Ilana Glazer and Prabal Gurung, they all posted for us on Instagram, and you know, the conversation changed, money started rolling in. And that's when we realized, like, it's kind of absurd how we had to contact celebrities to spread the word about something that's technically, like, you know, in the news. Mm. And so we basically replicated social media for media in a way, where we basically created, like, you know, an app which gives you everything you need to know in 9 second reads. And the format is very much like TikTok. So you're kind of like scrolling through and you're just reading like one screenshot after one another. So in a few seconds, you're all caught up.
Love it. Just before we go on from there, when it's really interesting what you say about kind of cold emailing celebrities to get them on board. How did you start that process? How did you like get the lists and how did you approach them? And you said you got some good feedback from that, right? So were you offering as like a kind of monetary exchange to do something, or was it very organic? It'd be really interesting to know from a kind of growth perspective how you guys did that.
So basically it was for a social cause, right? It was for migrants at the border. And so we didn't really have to pay them for any, you know, it's not publicity for us in a way. It wasn't publicity for our company. It was really about like doing what's right and, you know, spreading the right information and getting help for the people who need it. And so the process was, honestly, we had to Google it ourselves. We literally had to find out how do we get in touch with celebrities. And it sounded pretty simple, right? Like you had to get, you had to email people in their entourage. So basically the managers, the PR agents, and there are a couple of websites. Some of the websites URL is basically hilarious, like contactcelebrities.com. But the better one is IMDb. You need to subscribe. IMDb Pro, and you get all the information in terms of like who is managing that particular celebrity and you know, their contact details. And it's really easy to find an email, so yeah, you can find it on like multiple websites like Rocket Reach and Visor and stuff like that.
Okay, amazing. And I guess you had to craft quite an attractive message, right? Because those people must be getting emailed all day long.
Pretty much. I mean, at that point, we really had to try anything different because whatever we were working on wasn't working. But we actually got really interesting feedback. Like the first person who responded was actually Jake Gyllenhaal, but he got caught up in like Spider-Man promotions. So when we were watching Spider-Man, we're just like, should have done this for us. But yeah, I think it was a very easy way to get in touch with celebrities, but especially because they all spoke a lot about migrants and immigration. And so it was a cause that they particularly felt for, which is why we targeted them specifically. Mm. And so it was a win-win.
And was that in relation with Volve at the moment, or was it before Volve? I'm trying to connect the dots between the charity,
yeah,
the celebrities,
so
and
this
Volve.
It's like weird, but
go for it.
Yeah, this was way before Volve started. So we started off doing this, and then when we worked on the migrant crisis and we realized like the misinformation and the polarization in the news, we realized we needed a better way to just give news to people, especially millennials and Gen Z. And so that's kind of like how it started off. I mean, I think at that point it was more like Volve actually started off as like an unbiased news app, and when we had launched the app, we actually, it was just like all serious, like CNN kind of Reuters kind of news. And we actually had Mark Cuban as part of us, our first 500 users. And he was like, you got to change the content. And he was like, he's saying it's really like well designed, but he's like, the content, he's saying it's kind of boring. So it was like a lot of trial and error, like just kind of figuring out the content and like what people wanted. And that took like almost a year just figuring out like what was really appealing to users. And that's kind of when we, you know, as Vault Startup, as just like unbiased news, it was then we transitioned more into, okay, we'll do a good amount of like pop culture, you know, interesting digs, things that people don't really know, with a good balance of things that they should be knowing in like the political sphere, right? And then it kind of then transitioned into what you see evolve today, which is we curate any kind of content on Instagram to Twitter and like TikTok and YouTube videos, podcasts, newsletters, and all of that. Because, you know, we sort of realized over time is like, you know, people don't really have time to do all these things, like, you know, listen to podcast episodes or, you know, read long newsletter articles. And so it was more like, okay, this is a really quick way for you to like be on top of it and, you know, read more or listen more if you wanted to. And so so now Valve is half of that and then half of, you know, a good amount of, you know, political news all around the world, basically.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, we call it curation as well. I think curation in any industry is a very good, like it's a powerful tool, you know, in anything, fashion, news, whatever it is. That's super cool. And I was gonna ask, like, how big is it now? Can you talk about numbers? Like, where are you so far in your journey with Valve?
Instead of like users, we can talk about the swipes.
Yeah,
we've got like 35 million stories swiped on the app, which we're really proud about.
Nice.
And that's kind of like a metric that we kind of, you know, it's kind of like a North Star because it not only tells us like about new users, but also about how engaged the users are. Yeah. So the same person can be opening it like 5 times versus like 10 times in the same week, right? So it kind of all accumulates under that one metric.
Nice.
That's awesome. And it's obviously, I'm assuming it, the kind of average number of swipes per user is fairly high, seeing as each article only takes like 9-10 seconds to consume. Where did that 9-second kind of idea come from?
Actually, when we first started, when we first worked on Valve, it was going to be number of words, actually. That's kind of how we were thinking about it. And I remember, Priyanka had spoken to her mom and she was like, what is 50 words? Like, how long is that? And then we were like, what do you mean? And she's like, you know, time, like what, how long is that? And we were like, oh, and then that's kind of when we were like, oh, okay, cool. Like it's around like 9 to 10 seconds. And then we stuck with 9 because 10 just seemed like we didn't want it to be double digits. And then we actually timed ourselves recording the entire thing. And it was around 9 seconds. We were like, okay, let's go with this then. So that's kind of how we came up with it.
Also, our attention span is, so we were focusing on short form content, right? So which is why we're thinking of like really short, like bits in the little box on the app. And so our attention span has actually been declining because of like, you know, TikTokification of our brains, literally. And so that's why like our attention span is actually down to 9 seconds at the moment. It used to be like 12 seconds a couple of years ago, but it's 9 now and it's very worrying, but we also included that in the entire branding, you know, because it's true. It's like everybody realizes it. So it's just a really neat way.
Yeah, I love that. It's very cool. It's not good news for an hour long podcast, is it? If the average attention span is 9 seconds. And
we'll include a little bit on our app and then link out to you guys.
Yeah. Make sure you do that. I'm interested in the millions of swipes. But I was going to jump into that. There is also an interesting point there about every trend attracts the opposite trend almost at the same time. And I think it's still very niche, but I think there is also a little something happening in like long form again, as well as things like printed magazines when it comes to reading. that are like in less quantity but better curation or better quality. I think there is like an interesting thing there with like, we'll see where that goes, but when something goes really one way, the complete opposite tend to start trending again as like, you know, sort of a circle, isn't it?
Yeah, I think like there's always going to be a resurgence of long form in the future. I mean, the way I look at it is like, just like, you know, how vinyls had to come back, we're going to have magazines and long form too. And I think for us, it's not that we don't think that long form is going to stick around. It's more like we just genuinely want to double down on that specific market that doesn't really have time to read all of that, right? Because I definitely am part of that cohort. And it's not like, not because I don't like reading. I read a lot. I just genuinely don't have the time to do that. So it's really more about like being very specific in the niche that we're targeting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's definitely that, the cutting down of long form content from in the tech world, right? You've got multiple apps now that will summarize like technical books or self-help books or even now fiction books down into just like the key bullet points. So it's definitely a trend. And like you say, on a commute, it's really interesting to be able to, rather than spend 20 minutes reading a really long form Guardian article, you can basically get, you know, that the trick that people say we need to do is read the first sentence and the last sentence of like any news article, and you basically got the whole story there. So it's like you guys are kind of doing that. So the technology itself, like, is it everywhere, or do you feed it specific sources to kind of pull news from, or is it kind of wild and getting its content from anywhere it wants?
Yeah, so basically the way we actually have like a dashboard that pulls in, you know, sources like different publications and things like that. So we do have a list that we do have a specific list, but that list is like ever changing. Like we keep adding new sources over time. So it's not just like, okay, the top 10, you know, BBC, CNN, it's not just like that. So it's a very vast, extensive list that we curate from. And even on social media, we're kind of pulling in content from everywhere, whatever's trending, basically. We kind of can see what's, you know, gaining more traction. And so we are kind of on top of it in that sense. So say something obscure is going viral on TikTok, oh, we're able to cover that immediately and sort of like, you know, publish that. So say like it's like, you know, something like the mob wife, you know, aesthetic that's going viral on TikTok. I think we covered that a while ago. Yeah, it's weird, but it's crazy aesthetics that go viral all the time. And I think like a lot of people aren't on TikTok. Like I'm not on TikTok at all, but our team is we're able to be on top of it because we're able to curate what's trending and able to capture that before it goes mainstream. And I think that's the really key part in this, so that, you know, people who are reading Volve are, they're able to be on top of things before it goes mainstream. And I think that's like the key USP over here too.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I guess from that perspective, with you guys doing some form of curation in terms of sources, you have to be careful with your balance, right? That you're across the whole spectrum of, you know, from right to left when it comes to political, so that people aren't like, oh, you know, this is only pulling information from, you know, left-wing media sources, for instance. And I guess that's quite a question that you guys probably are going to come up against or come up against all the time, and a difficult thing to balance, right?
I mean, we are trying to be neutral, like right from the get-go, we really focus on being unbiased, but then we realize that we kind of need to like just be neutral in terms of what we push out. So if something's happening, obviously right now there's, you know, people are talking about like Palestine and Israel, so we're never like one side is right. We just explain what happened and then people can make their own opinion. Yeah. And I think that's just what Gen Z wants today, right? It's just like, tell me what happened and I'll decide what I think. And it's just something that's more attractive to the younger generation, because sometimes when you're just being told different opinions, it's just really distracting and you're always like in this echo chamber. So we're trying to be neutral in that perspective. But in general, in terms of curation, like it really boils down to the fact that there's so much content that's spread across the internet, right? Like there's so many different apps. And instead of going on Instagram and then Twitter and then TikTok and then Reddit and then a bunch of newsletters in your email and then the news websites, like one by one, like that's just too much information and too much time and too much effort. we have none of them, like no time, no patience. And so we literally give you all of that in one place. So it's not just stuff that you want to know, but it's also stuff that you should know. So that's the real balance that we're, you know, always looking at.
Mm. That's really cool. I wanted to ask you, actually, where does the AI part of the company comes into play? Is it in multiple places or just about rewriting, summarizing the news in 9 seconds? Or is it maybe in like the personalization? As soon as you start swiping, it recognizes what you like and stuff. Like, can you walk us through that if you can?
So obviously summarization is something that, you know, we need AI for. It just makes everything very quick. In terms of AI for personalization, initially, whenever you start anything, you need data for the AI, right? So initially, we did not have that personalization feature because we were just trying to collect data in terms of like, how are people engaging with the content? So we're tracking, how many seconds are you spending on the app? Are you engaging? Are you liking, sharing, bookmarking any of the articles? And then after that, we started working on an AI. So we have like different iterations and we're just trying to get better and better. So there is a certain level of AI personalization that's like constantly being, we're constantly trying and evolving and like, you know, reiterating and pushing it out. So that's another aspect.
Awesome. No, that's really cool. Is there any, securities in place to check what the AI is doing when it's taking the information from like multiple sources? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's something that AI will never be perfect in, because there's always going to be some kind of errors and biases involved. So we do have an editorial team that kind of supervises the content before it gets pushed out. Not only do they check the sources, but they're also checking things like, you know, grammar in case there's a mistake. But it's a pretty quick process, but they do need to do some sort of verification process and before it gets published on the app. So because I don't think that we can 100% just rely on AI, I do think some sort of human handling is always going to be required in this kind of, you know, situation especially.
Yeah, you definitely go into a rabbit hole of reading some things that just make absolutely no sense if you let it go. You got like crazy with everything. But when you spoke just then, Priyanka, about when you launched and you were collecting that initial kind of user data and understanding how people were interacting with the stories and stuff, how was that launch process? How did you get the first kind of 100, 200, 300 users how did you work with them?
We actually just did a talk on this, and it's really funny because that is a massive fuck up. So when we launched, we really did not really promote the product before it was actually ready. We never really focused on having an email list or having like all of these people cheering for us and like, you know, building with us in a way. So that was a major issue. Something that we would never recommend to anyone. So when we actually launched the app, we had barely like, you know, the team, family, friends, like literally like 10, 20 people. And so that's when we're like, okay, we're going to hustle down and like figure out what we need to do. And so a few quick things that really helped us with our initial traction. Number one was Product Hunt. So launching a Product Hunt gave us that initial traction, and people are very, very open to new products and trying, you know, like early adopters. So that was really good. Another thing we did was cold email a bunch of like YouTube tech bloggers. And that again really shocked us, because if literally one person posts about us, like we got such a big spike in our growth. And again, like you really need to think about like who's talking about it, right? So if one of the really big tech bloggers is like vouching for your product, like all of their thousands of followers are going to listen. So that was another one. And then beta list was another one that, you know, we tried initially. So these were the three main things for the first, like say 100, 200, 500 mark.
That's really cool. The people you, the creators, YouTubers that you contacted, was it all on no contract basis, like no monetary exchange, just check this out? and talk about it if you like it type thing.
Pretty much.
Amazing. Amazing.
That's the hard part when it comes to a consumer, like an early stage consumer app, right? Like there's just so much pressure to do something quickly. And at the same time, like, you know, you have to get through to so many people to even get those downloads. And I think it was the entire process for growth has been particularly difficult for us because number one, our core users don't use social media. And we only realize this later on. So it doesn't matter how much money we pump in into, you know, like social media ads or anything. It's not necessarily going to convert. And the second fact is that this is also mostly true for major, like for most consumer apps. It's that it's a free app. And so unlike Uber, you know, when it's like, okay, it's your first ride, you recommend your friend and you both get a free ride. Like that's really quick. You recommend 10 people because you want 10 free rides. But for us, it's so difficult because it's a free app. Like, what are you going to promise? So these two things in particular just made it really difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have you thought about any other ways that you could maybe get some growth within the product, or you're still working on it?
Yeah, I think we did implement a referral program, and obviously at that point, you know, we couldn't really offer our users anything. You know, there was no like feature or something that they were going to be like, okay, let's pay for, like, let's, you know, let me refer someone to get this feature, because Valve's core feature is to just, you know, be able to read quickly, and you can't take that away from them. So we linked it to merchandise, and that didn't work out well. So we're actually launching our Valve Premium, you know, our monetization this week. And so we're beta testing that for, you know, for like a month or so, just trying to see like what's going to work out. But I think with that, it's like what's really cool is that we have all these really cool features. So if you don't want to see ads on Valve, you can pay for premium. And if you we're launching a new feature, which is text to speech. So if you want to get that, you can, you know, pay for premium. And so we're going to start linking our referrals now to getting 1 month free. So you refer a friend and you can get 1 month premium. And I think that might have a little bit more leverage because you're obviously getting something off like, it's like worth something, you know, versus like merchandise.
Yeah.
So it's obviously been, you know, a trial and error. We realized that obviously, you know, merchandise wasn't going to cut it. And there's no one way to do anything, especially when you're building a media company, especially news. In fact, a lot of VCs think that you can growth hack your way to it, but that's not really plausible. When it comes to like media and content, and I'm sure you guys know this as well, like building a podcast company, it's, you have to just keep throwing out different kinds of content out there to see which, what kind of sticks, right? And it sort of changes like every week. Like one podcast episode might work out really well and the next might not perform that well. And that's just the nature of the game, right? So growth hacking your way to, you know, getting users involved isn't really going to lead to anything. You really have to figure out, you know, what's your niche, who are your core users, what do they like? And that only came after a very, very long time of, you know, interviewing them. It wasn't, you know, after months of interviewing them that we realized that, oh, okay, like our power users are people who don't even go on social media, because they would constantly say, oh, I don't go on Instagram, but, you know, you guys posted this really interesting article from there and that was really cool. And they would keep saying these things until like one day we were discussing and we were like, wait, that's a common thread between all of them, you know? And that's when we realized that's the market right over there, like people who don't go on social media. And, you know, now we have to like, you know, and if we had just taken like VC money and just like splurged it on getting, you know, all these users, it, we would have like literally burnt all of it and, you know, not really figured out, you know, who that user was. So it's just a very long process. So now we're a little bit more aware and now we know like, okay, cool. So they're smart. They have like high spending power, things like that. So, you know, going to like more platforms like LinkedIn and Twitter has a higher, you know, it has more value than going to, you know, TikTok Instagram. Not to say that, you know, posting on Instagram or TikTok's going to take away anything, but it's more like the ads won't work that well on those platforms versus like, you know, LinkedIn or Twitter.
That is I love that. I love the way the journey to us like what you've tried and your approach to it. That's really cool. Little plug for the merch. You guys went from a little merch journey. We just made ads for the podcast with Jake, so they're coming in a few weeks. We're still at the merch stage. We're going to find out that no one wants our merch, and then we'll move into something else.
We're still at the bribery stage.
Very different. Again, like what works for one company doesn't necessarily work for
Exactly. Yeah.
Because we've seen merch work really well for other companies, and we're like, oh, cool, it's worth a try. And like, while some people definitely were really enthusiastic about it, like, people did share for merchandise. We still get emails like, "Hey, where's my camera?" Stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just it's not enough to move the needle, but some people would like it.
Not enough for like, you know, like game changer growth, but at the same time, it did help, and it just made us realize, like, okay, fine, like. People are willing to share for things, but maybe merch isn't it for us. So this is why like the next thing is premium, right? And so it's another experiment for us.
That makes sense.
Just to spend a few minutes on that, because I think it's really interesting about the user research part. And so two questions from that. One is your kind of tagline on the site is the anti-social media app. Did that come off the back of understanding that the core audience actually doesn't use social, or was that already something you had in mind?
No, it was way after. It was only once we, you know, spoke to all these users, and it was like I did a whole bunch of interviews, and then Priyanka did a whole bunch of interviews, and we came together, and then we were just like talking, and it was like an aha moment, and we were like, oh, okay, cool, let's brand now the company a little bit more in that direction, and we kept doubling down on that. So we had no idea. There was no way you can even figure out something as niche as that. And, you know, it was like something as random as them saying like, oh, I don't use social media, so I like that you linked out to Instagram. There was no, it was not even a specific question that I asked them like, hey, do you use social media? It wasn't even that. It was just like them talking. So it was really more of a, you just had to do the dirty work and just, you know, keep interviewing users.
That's awesome. I think it's an amazing case study for, you know, some people will start a business and they'll spend so long in crafting the what the brand is and the messaging behind that brand. But I think it makes total sense. And we've kind of seen it time and time again that you don't need to do that. What you need to do is talk to people and understand how they're using it. So that leads on to my second question, which was how different now is your understanding, but the persona that you have for your, say, power user versus when you had the idea and who you initially thought that target audience was?
So just like you mentioned, we made the absolute biggest mistake by not talking to anyone, right? And so we were building in the dark, spending way too much time on branding, on designing, on, you know, like what it sounds like. And we also thought like, okay, it's news, like everybody should be targeted, right? And so we kept that so broad, thinking that if we go niche, it might hurt us, but it was actually the opposite. Because we went so broad, there were so many different buckets of people who kind of use the app, but we never really had them under one umbrella. And so initially it was very difficult to target any kind of, you know, audience per se. Like we just said Gen Z and millennials, but that's very, very vast. And so only after these interviews, we started to like, you know, really see, okay, who are these people? How are they using the app? And then kind of like change the messaging, because automatically when you change the messaging, it attracts the right people, right? Because when you say anti-social media, it's like, oh wait, even I don't use social media. I think this is right for me. Or when you say something like, this is for people who don't use social media, it also kind of like changes the narrative, because a lot of time VCs would be like, you know, but your competitors are like the Instagrams and TikToks of the world. But earlier we were kind of worried by that, you know, like we were like, oh shit, like technically they are right. But then that's actually not true, because those people are not using the Instagrams and the TikToks. And so we're actually in a massive, like, you know, we're actually like in a good spot, because this audience is like literally untapped by anybody else except for us. And so it's literally like only after getting to know who these users are, we've kind of like used that for our benefit, whether it's an investor call, whether it's like marketing or anything else.
That's amazing. And have you, that type of persona that isn't using social media, really interesting to me. Have you found that is, they kind of skew towards a certain demographic or age group? Or have you seen that in fact, there is potentially a movement of the younger generation, Generation Z, etc., moving kind of away from social and like turning their back on it. Of all the issues that we see social media presenting to the world, do you see from speaking to your users that there is a movement away from it, or it's just people that have never been into it?
I think like we for our users, the people who use the app the most, we have product managers, we have engineers, and we actually have a lot of high school students and a lot of college students. So I think when it comes to the Gen Z cohort, it's definitely, you can make out that it's like the top cohort of, you know, college, like high school students. I'm not trying to be like biased or anything, but they're definitely the people who are a little bit more serious, because like I can't go to high school and just be like, everyone download. Like, no one's going to do it. They're only going to do it if, you know, they're, you know, an honor student or something like that, because they want to get into college and things like that. So I think there is definitely a use case for a very specific Gen Z cohort in that sense. And then when it comes to millennials, a lot of millennials don't use TikTok. So I guess from that perspective, it's great. And I think like you had to divide the millennial cohort into two, like the newer incoming, you know, millennials and like the older millennials. And so the newer millennials, for them, they don't use TikTok. They are on social media, but, you know, they're not, I think for them, they use Valve in the sense that, you know, to be on top of things that they're, you know, on platforms that they're not really on.
Yeah.
Versus the old geriatric millennials, they're just genuinely not on social media, because like we've interviewed a ton of them. And for them, it's more like, you know, we're not on Instagram. They're not on TikTok. You know, they don't use Snapchat, anything, right? So for them, I think like Valve has worked out really well for that specific cohort. And Valve works really well for boomers, actually, because they actually have no idea what's going on with the youngsters at all. So this is their way to be on top of everything. They're like, oh, I can, because we've had like a lot of Gen Z friends who've told their parents like, hey, download Valve so like you know what's happening around the world, because like, you know, things like that, because like it's such a great way to be updated on what's happening everywhere. So I definitely see like different cohorts, like, you know, using the product differently for different purposes. So I definitely don't think we can sort of eliminate one cohort completely, but we definitely do double down on like millennials and like, you know, the top of the spectrum, sort of like Gen Zs who really do care about news and things like that. I don't even want to be mean about it, but we definitely do see that trend going on.
In another way, we just say like high performing individuals. So really doesn't matter whether they're Gen Z, whether they're millennials or anything, because like literally we've kind of captured like the, like say the valedictorians and then the founders and then, you know, like the C-suite executives and then even like 90-year-olds who, I remember when I was doing, you know, some user interviews and this guy mentioned like, oh, I love the app. I was like, okay, cool. Are you ready to get on a call? And I was expecting like, you know, somebody really young telling me they love the app. Turns out to be a 90-year-old who's working with his entire life. And he sounded exactly like a Gen Zer in terms of like his complaints and his problems, right? Like the problems are standard throughout. It's like, there's so much going on. I can't keep up. This is amazing. So it's amazing to see how it's resonating with different groups, but it really boils down to the same problem.
That's crazy. You must have found the only 90-year-old in the world that wants to do a user interview for an AI news app. They're probably the only guy. That's amazing. I wanted to make the transition to the kind of like the tech audience, because one, and stop me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the way I also know about you is because you do have a section in the Hacker, right? In the newsletter. And you mentioned Product Hunt as well, because I was doing some research, and then in my email I typed the name and there was like all these emails popped up. I was like, they didn't send me all these emails, what is this? And I was like, oh, that's the India newsletter. So can you tell us a little bit about that? You mentioned Product Hunt in the very first few hundred users. When did India come? Is it a similar field, but like was it a bit later and is more like a partnership type thing?
Yeah, it was actually one of the first partnerships, and honestly like one of the best ones. So it was really by chance. So I remember I was in LA and, you know, I was trying to go to these tech events and At one of these events, it was really cool because, you know, at this point, I'm just like trying to get started in terms of pitching, seeing like feedback, like, and then trying to do more of these events where people are more, you know, in the same, in the tech space and like trying to give you feedback. And so at these events, it just went really well. Like a lot of great feedback, a lot of people gave, you know, like, encouragement, support, et cetera, et cetera. So I try to like stay really close to this community. And so I signed up the newsletter. And then I remember one of the newsletters talked about like, hey, we're looking for content. If anybody wants to write for us, like, let us know. And then I immediately emailed them like,
wow,
we publish so much content on tech. Let's chat. And so, you know, they're happy. Again, it's like really a partnership where it's completely synergistic. Like we have so much content, happy to share if you get some leads. And they are all about like, you know, the tech community, they want tech news. Instead of going out there and doing the same work themselves, they're like, cool, we just pick like, you know, 5 news stories and then that's it. So
that's amazing.
Again, it's a win-win.
No, that's the synergy there is great. They get amazing content curated by your app, and you get exposure through there. I have no idea how big Indiaca is, but I can imagine it's big.
It's actually really big, like 70,000 people.
Wow. It's great. Have you managed to replicate that with other communities or newsletters out there?
Not a similar model where they publish like, you know, a weekly newsletter and we send out our content on their newsletters, but we are working on, you know, collaborations with other newsletters. So basically what we do is we reach out to a newsletter and we're like, hey, we'd love to feature you guys on Volve, and in return we'd love to get featured on your newsletter as well. So it can be as organic as that, and that's such a great way to get, you know, visibility and growth. And it doesn't really hurt because all you're doing is just like exchanging like, you know, content for a little bit, a little bit of space on their newsletter. And so we got a ton of replies and a lot of people who do want to partner up with us. And so we partner up in different categories, like productivity is a huge one. A lot of them want to partner with us, or just like, you know, newsletters on cool things that you find on the internet, you know. So it does work out like collabs like this. It's like low cost. Actually, it's no cost. And it's like, you know, the easiest thing to do because it works out for both parties, right? Like they can choose to get featured on our app. And we do have a newsletter as well, so they can also get featured on our newsletter. So it really, they have multiple options, and yeah, kind of works out for everyone.
Making people's jobs so much easier, right? Because before, when they're curating stuff for their newsletter, they just scroll through the app now and they're like, oh, it's done. They should be paying a premium for that.
That's great. I love this strategy because it is manual. There's a lot of back and forth, I guess, in putting these relationships in place. But it's like you said, it's pretty much free except for time. And it's great in the early stages to get the exact audience that you know is interested in what you do without having to give your money to Google and Meta.
Some of our users who've been on our app for the longest have come from newsletters and podcasts. Like they stick around for a very long time. Like if we've done podcasts in the past before, they've like, if I interview a power user today, they're like, oh, I actually found out about you guys through this newsletter or a podcast. So like it definitely does resonate with the high performing individuals who do, you know, like to better themselves. And so it does match the cohort that we have.
Yeah.
Everybody listening to this, don't let us down and make us look stupid. You need to go and become power users of Volve right now. I don't want to be the only podcast that didn't drive any usage.
Yeah. Go download the app, use it, make sure you came from us.
Are the articles indexed anywhere? Like, is there a plan to index them on Google? So for instance, you could be building this huge web of SEO. Or is that just not on the radar right now?
That is something we're working towards, but we're constantly having some issues. But that is the goal, honestly. That would be ideal because we have so much content, literally on a daily basis, 100 articles. So, yeah.
And you could use AI as well to deploy a lot of these pages automatically with like a small editorial team, like you, I'm sure you have now. You mentioned, yeah, it's a good shout.
Yeah, we tried doing it, but it wasn't actually getting indexed. There were so many issues, and you know, when you're a startup this size, you just like your bandwidth mostly goes into fixing bugs. And it's like you have to do some important feature releases, so you just kind of have to like choose one or the other.
I want to change subject a little bit, but I think I read that you were in the Snapchat incubator, and Jake and I have, I think, zero clue about how this one works. Is it like, so I wanted to ask you, like, how does it work? Congratulations as well. Is it like a Y Combinator type thing? And like, can you talk to us about it a little bit?
Yeah, it's kind of like Y Combinator. So obviously a smaller scale. So Snapchat, instead of, you know, Y Combinator doing like almost 100 companies a year, Snapchat just focus on like 10 companies a year.
It's more curated, more qualitative. Yeah.
And I think they really cared about just more content related companies. So it's a very niche sector that they're looking at. But unfortunately, they shut down. But going back to how it helped, like initially, obviously, it was a huge stamp of approval, right? Like, because you are nobody, and then you have the validation on Snapchat automatically. People are like, okay, I see you. And then also it came with funding, so we got our pre-seed from Snapchat. And then also a lot of like value, right? So throughout the course, like every week, there was some kind of, you know, direction from the program directors. They always had like guest speakers, and then at the end we also had like a little meeting with Evan Spiegel, where he actually checked out our app and like talked about like the fact that our design is really cool. So that was really encouraging. And I think one thing that also really helped, and one great thing that came out of it, was another sort of partnership actually, where we have a channel on Snapchat Discover. So we push out content on a daily basis on Snapchat Discover. Again, it's not necessarily like you can link out to, you know, our app or our website, but it's more about like brand awareness. And especially like, you know, like Snapchat is massive, like hundreds of millions of Gen Zers use it on a daily basis. So even just being in front of them and just having Volve there, and like, you know, having like stories that they can like kind of see and like recognize, that recognition factor is really important. So even that has been really interesting.
Well, that must be huge. You must be getting a ton of traffic from that, right?
So actually, like, it's more brand awareness than actual like leads, because
Snapchat doesn't link towards your app very easily. Maybe it's
It doesn't have any like click throughs outside. They don't allow you to leave the Snapchat ecosystem in a way. So,
But you're in the discovery page basically with all these other like big publications.
So there's like Daily Mail, Cosmo, Vogue.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's amazing. Have you ever tried to measure like the indirect impact of that, the awareness, but also probably does something, right, in terms of users?
I mean, it's more brand awareness, and you know, the fact that like our target audience is not necessarily on social, so at least they're aware of it. That's great, but we also do get like some kind of ad revenue from there, so we're not complaining.
That's nice. Cool. And I was going to say, so do you get to see how many stories are delivered to users through Snap? Is there like a reporting dashboard that you can see that?
Yeah, we can see how many people have viewed it, which story they, you know, spent time on, and how many people shared, which kind of demographics, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really helpful to have like another avenue to see like, you know, which kind of demographic is our content attracting.
That's interesting. But it's obviously not, is it customized to the user or not when it's through Snap?
What do you mean?
So that the content that they, whereas if you use Volve, you'll get content that you interact with usually, but through Snap, is there less of that personalization and it's just the content that you send to them? That makes sense.
Yeah, we basically upload like, you know, basically one story a day. We can't really pick. We just have to go with one. It can't be like demographics, be something else.
Okay, that makes sense. That so really on, cool. on the back of that talk about data, you guys must be sitting on a lot. There must have been a lot of thought around the kind of architecture of the data that you're capturing on your users, not necessarily their individual data, but in terms of what people are engaging with and the kind of content that people like, and I guess tagging every piece of content with lots of different tags and things, like, there must have been quite a big bit of work up front to work out how you're going to harness or capture that initially, and then how you're actually going to use it to inform the product going forward, right?
Definitely. We do capture our data, but I think it's also like a work in progress, because we keep like updating, you know, new data that we have to keep, you know, that we would want to know more from our users. I think it's like really tricky, especially with Valve, because like there's so much that we have to capture like every second. Because like every swipe, depending on how long they're reading it, because it's just 9 seconds. It's not like a long, lengthy article. So they're capturing all this data and it gets fed back into our user recommendation system, things like that. Eventually, you know, obviously we wouldn't use specific user data for ads, but just like broader picture things like, you know, okay, this is going to perform better than, you know, XYZ. And it's just sometimes really interesting to see things that really end up, you know, like how a lot of people are like, oh, we want more serious news, but then we said, you know, they'll always choose categories like US news, world news, you know, politics, and then, you know, they end up reading a lot about the Kardashians. So I think like data really moves really great in that sense, because it shows how human behavior really is. So it's been interesting to see that play out, definitely.
Yeah, it's cool. And it gives you guys some interesting. Me and Yo did an episode a while back last year about data as content, and you guys must have a lot of that, because that example that you just gave right there is an interesting story that you can generate off the back of your own content, which is like, you know, 50% of people that read about the, you know, articles about Donald Trump also spent more time, you know, reading about the Kris Jenner or something like that. And it's a fun place to play where you have data that you can turn into content for marketing or just for general usage. Yeah, it's very cool. So we're kind of running up against it on time, but you guys are hiring for a growth hacker, right, on your website. So just be interested to go into like, what do you feel like for the next 6 to 12 months? Like, what do you want to get out of that role?
So for us, like the main way we have been growing is organic. And we kind of want to continue on that, because obviously we are an early stage startup. Like, we don't have unlimited cash to just burn. And so we're always on the lookout for anybody who's really crafty in terms of like coming up with really out of the box ideas to reach our target audience, not necessarily through like, you know, paid ads, but just like, you know, having these different experiments and trying to figure out that network effect that allows us to grow very quickly.
Yeah, so, that makes sense.
Like, one of the plays is, you know, like partnerships with different creators, whether they're podcasters, newsletter writers, et cetera, or even like we're planning to start a podcast ourselves.
There you go.
that's possibly one too. And yeah, just really coming up with different ideas, because, you know, nothing necessarily works for one, translates to another. So it's really about coming up with our own strategies.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think like the biggest thing that we need to sort of figure out, Valve, is like, how do we get like our current user to like refer like someone new, right? Currently, a lot of users, they just really love using Valve and they don't really talk about it to anyone, and so they're power users, but like they won't refer anyone unless like, you know, you incentivize them a lot. So just figuring those things out is something that we want to try to, you know, figure out over the next few months. How do we make Valve more shareable, basically? Currently it's like kind of looped in the system, but we want to get them, you know, out of the system, basically
building those growth loops.
If any of the listeners have ideas,
I was gonna say, if one of you listening is has ideas or is looking for a job, here you go, there's a very cool one. Reach out to Priyanka or Shannon. I had one last question before we wrap up. How did you get Mark Cuban in the first users in the app? Do you know him?
Unfortunately, not. That was literally another cold email.
There you go.
Mark.cuban@gmail.com.
No, it's actually, honestly, if you Google it, it just comes out right there.
I mean, yeah, no, we accordion is underrated, you know, when you start, yeah, like definitely. you need to.
I think one of the secret weapons for us that has worked consistently is literally cold emailing. And I think everybody underestimates it so much. Like, we don't have these networks. Like, he's not our friend. I wish he were, but cold email is like one thing that a lot of people don't like, you know, try. And you can get in touch with literally anybody in the world. Like, if they don't respond, then it's fine. Like, it's totally cool. But if they do, it's like, completely changes your trajectory, so why not?
I think we've been, as in the marketing field, we tend to like ruin everything that we do. I think I'll put sales into that as well. Like, you know, when there's one thing that works really well, we like push it to the limit until it's like everyone is like disgusted by it. But I think there is a resurgence of cold approaching people, not only in emails, but also in like in DMs, you know, on Instagram, X, whatever it is. I think if it's genuine, if you're not being a weirdo and you're offering something that could be useful for the person, not trying to sell them something, that's also the big part. If you're not trying to actually get money off of them, and you're trying to build a network, I think definitely go for it. There's a way to do that in a very genuine way where people, at least some people will reply, some people will ignore, and that's the name of the game. So well done on that. That's great.
The hardest part is writing an email that sounds genuine when you're sending it to like 100 people.
Unless you're writing an individual email for each of them, and then you're like, you know, putting the effort, you know.
Well, yeah, but then you still think way too much about it. And if you're just emailing someone you already know.
If you are emailing that one person who can change everything for you, you will put in that time, and I think it's worth it. So
yeah, exactly. So put the effort where the biggest rewards could be.
On a completely separate question, you guys have done such a good job of like sharing the answers. Are you like communicating with each other, like who's going to answer each one, or is it just so I was like, whatever system they're using, we need to use that.
No, we don't have a system. I think it's more like we know what to say at this point. We've been doing this for a while. I'm gonna be honest with you. Second is like, it's just like, stood like, she'll do one, I'll do the next. We don't divide it. It's just like whatever we think of, we'll just talk about it. And like, if I forget something, she'll chime in or whatever. So it's all good.
That's good. Great. You made our jobs a lot easier than if it was just four people all talking over each other at the same time. And hopefully we asked some interesting questions that were maybe different to the million other times that you've spoken about this in the past. We can hope, anyway.
Definitely.
If people want to reach out to you, what's the best way to contact you or get involved with? That sounded weird, but yeah.
Involved.
You can reach out to our company email, connect@volvemedia.com, or literally follow us on social media, where Get Volve on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, literally slide into our DMs. Always open to that.
Nice. Amazing. Thank you, both of you. I really enjoyed chatting to you. I think Jake as well.
And yeah, it's been really great.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, a lot of useful insight for our listeners, for sure. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. And hopefully we're going to give you at least some more users. Come on, guys, don't let us down. Go download it right now. V-O-L-V.
Thousands.
Love it.
All right.
Thanks so much for having us. It was awesome.
Have a good rest of the day.
All right. See you guys.